is Cascadia Public Radio.
Information is free.
The law of course.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Here to border
on shows.
The law of course.
The country.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
No love for the New World Order on this Valentine's Day, Friday the 13th. And it's Media Monarchy, episode 111, Friday the 13th, February 2009, coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority and the Revere Radio Network, where none of them knew they were adorable killer robots. We got Black Helicopters, Google Latitude, HR 645, Police Brutality, Eco-Terror, Eugenics, Re-Education, and Recalls, Gates, Beck, Gore, Garrison, Haslam, and deeper down the rabbit hole of the JFK assassination. It's all here and tons, tons, tons more. Episode 111, Friday the 13th, February 2009. It's MediaMonarchy.com.
Technology's allowed us to do everything from land on the moon to fake landing on the moon. And now technology may be about to solve one of our most vexing problems. Matt V has more in the latest installment of Future Shock.
Future Shock! Robots. They've already revolutionized the way we clean our homes and spot weld. Now they're about to help us cross the last frontier of human unpleasantness. Killing.
It's inevitable that there will be armed robots.
That's Colin Engel, CEI robot and creator of the Roomba. He received nearly $300 million from the government to transform his Roombas into mechanized soldiers.
Well, we've got the very cool robot called the SUGV, Soldiers Unmanned Ground Vehicle. And its job is to be a point man for our soldiers. So if they have to go into a building, throw the robot in.
And then it vacuum sticks.
Well,
as you can see from their promotional video, these robots aren't just sucking up dust, they're blowing evildoers away. Future Shock! Roombas of Doom!
Doombas!
You're so good at those!
I know!
At the iRobot headquarters, I got to meet all of their adorable killing machines.
Nice to meet you.
Oh.
Where do I find his genitals?
But not like roboticist Noel Sharkey actually see a downside to having robots do our killing.
I think there is a need to legislate for ethical standards of robotics, really.
Well, yeah, we don't want them getting married or anything. I'm just talking about having them defend our shores.
We haven't got a way of detecting when someone's carrying a weapon. For instance, if someone points a pistol at a robot, the robot would kill them. Or we'll point your ice cream at a robot.
You would never point an ice cream at a robot. That would be ridiculous, because robots don't eat ice cream.
If you were a very small child, you might think that it would eat ice cream.
I think you're talking about stupid children.
Well, you don't want to shoot stupid children either.
One of the good things about these small robots is that no matter what they do, they're much safer than a kid with a radio-controlled car.
Unlike yesterday's fighting robot, Science has ironed out all the kinks of today's robot soldiers.
The concern used to be common, at least, about somehow robots becoming, you know, the Terminator, you know, I kind of laugh, because in reality, the future is going to be far stranger than that.
Wow. What could be stranger than a time-traveling robot who goes on to become the governor of California?
Wouldn't it be cool to be able to have a memory chip that you could put on the back of your neck? You could augment yourself with some robot technology. Also, you understood calculus.
I totally get it.
Nerd!
You just can't just say to a robot, oh, don't shoot someone if they're a civilian, because it won't be able to tell the difference between innocent people and soldiers.
Well, look for the person who doesn't look suspicious.
How could you detect suspicion?
I don't know. He could be twirling his mustache or doing this with his cape.
It's not possible to do.
Why don't you build a robot that could improve your brain so that it will be possible to do?
Improve my brain?
Yeah.
That would be very difficult to do, I think.
Well, maybe you could build a robot that would make you more modest.
Robot soldiers are only the first step. It's only a matter of time before science replaces our hard-to-operate babies.
So lifelike.
Yeah, but it's adorable. What could possibly go wrong?
None of them knew they were adorable killer robots. That's, of course, The Daily Show investigating these adorable killer robots. iRobot recently awarded $286 million from the U.S. military to create combat robots. Appropriately enough, before that, we kicked it off with a track from Mr. Bungle. None of them knew they were robots. There's a million things to go over through that clip. Of course, RoboCop and Ed 209, and you have 10 seconds to comply, and he throws his gun down, and of course, it still blows him away anyway. And someone says, well, there will be armed robots in the future. There are armed robots in the present right now. Flashback links to October 2008 on MediaMonarchy.com. Robots will hunt non-cooperative humans in Army plan. And of course, just recently, will 2009 become the year of the killbot? But oh, we're getting ahead of ourselves, aren't we, my friends? It's Friday the 13th. It's the day before Valentine's Day. It's February 13th, 2009, and this is episode 111 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster, coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, and on the Revere Radio Network, revereradio.net, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And of course, thanks to the fine folks at KBFR 93.9 in Boulder, Colorado, for blasting out MediaMonarchy.com. I thank you, and I thank some of the new folks whose, unfortunately, I'm sorry, names I don't have in front of me right now, who have hit me up on Facebook, the first sort of non-actual friends that I've been making on Facebook. So you can hit up James Evan Pilato on Facebook, Media Monarchy on MySpace, YouTube, Yahoo, IM, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. So that's how we do it. And last night I recorded the B-side of episode 110 that is up for your listening pleasure, or probably displeasure, as it might be. Quick reminder, again, I made some MediaMonarchy.com shirts. You can hit the link at the top of the page and get a shirt from Cafe Press, made in America, American apparel, and you can wear it proudly. Many things to go over, many things filling my head, a lot of which is sickness, fighting a cold, fighting mice at home, fighting noisy neighbors upstairs. The Portland Radio Authority is under attack by the building owners for noise violations. I have to work in 2 hours. Obviously, I'm going to be late. 50 people have died in Buffalo, New York, as a plane crashed into a home near Buffalo. LA Times, all 49 on board and one person on the ground killed in the crash, which happened late last night, causes a major fire and explosion. Investigators trying to determine if ice on the wings brought the plane down. Again, the meme of planes crashing in New York. Of course, a few weeks ago, we had the Hudson plane crash, which has been the never-ending story. Never heard the end of that. But again, planes, New York, crashes. Be scared. I'm not saying it's on purpose, but it all swirls around in the synchro-mystic world of the media and the monarchy. Some of the other things, of course, on the news, in the news right now, also from Reuters, Israel kills youth in West Bank. Israeli warplanes on Friday struck two Palestinian militants on a motorcycle in the Gaza Strip. We've also got the leader of North Carolina Ku Klux Klan chapter passes away. That's, of course, from Fox News. Sirius satellite radio may definitely crash. Of course, they're trying to merge with XM or what have you. We also have the catastrophic crash of two satellites. That would be U.S. and Russian. We're going to cover a little bit on satellites. That story I have bookmarked. I haven't had time to post it up for you yet. There is too much going on, and again, it makes my stuffed-up head spin. So let's turn to page MediaMonarchy.com and our songbooks. And if you'll all rise. No kidding aside, this is the third in recent times that I posted up under the headline. Of course, we'll hit the flashbacks in just a few minutes. Black helicopters over New Orleans for terror drills. Of course, we've had black helicopters over Portland for terror drills, black helicopters over Denver for terror drills, those just in the last few months. But now, black helicopters over New Orleans for terror drills. Of course, through the 90s, the era of paranoia, militias, homegrown terrorism, black helicopters, that was a kook detector. Now, of course, it's on the front page of the Oregonian. They don't exist if you say they're bad, but they do, and they're good. From WWL-TV, bombs and choppers during military exercises startle residents. Residents in and around New Orleans have been hearing the sounds, or heard the sounds, of low-flying helicopters and what sounds like bomb blasts. But the sounds were part of a training exercise for some of America's elite military troops. This all according to military officials. And it's a training exercise that brought about 150 troops from the U.S. Special Operations Command to train in New Orleans for urban warfare. The forces were using simulated ammunitions, or simmunitions, almost like paintball pellets, to conduct the training. The NOPD did put out a press release about the training, and said WWL-TV aired a story about it. However, that was a week ago. Since U.S. Special Operations Command hasn't done a similar training there in New Orleans since 2000, it's caught many people by surprise. Now, of course, here in Portland, they said they were using live fire, and then, of course, when we raised a stink, they said, oh, wait, no, we're not. Try as I might, I was unable to swipe the video from WWL-TV and post it up to youtube.com/MediaMonarchy, but we recorded it, and here it is, and the link's there for you, black helicopters over New Orleans for terror drills.
Have been hearing the sounds of low-flying helicopters and what sounds like bomb blasts over the past few nights, but do not be alarmed. As Katie Moore explains, it is just a training exercise for some of America's most elite military troops.
At the Burke's Lakefront home, you normally hear six-year-old Beau practicing the piano, but last night...
I said, oh my God, is that bombs? That's what I thought it was, somebody dropping bombs. And
Gigi Burke says she panicked, not knowing why she was hearing what sounded like explosions and low-flying helicopters.
We're a little, skittish around here, you know, with things that have happened.
Burke said she's glad to know it's just training exercise. About 150 U.S. troops from the U.S. Special Operations Command are training in New Orleans for urban warfare.
They are regularly engaged in combat operations. They are the best of best that we have to offer across all the branches of the military.
Ciccioni says Black Hawk and Little Bird helicopters are transporting troops to several locations around New Orleans.
They're going, they'll be flying near buildings, doing approaches on them. You might see them landing on the rooftops or on the ground around those buildings as well.
I heard a bunch of explosions starting at 10 o'clock. They were about 10 seconds apart at first, and then they stopped, and then we thought it was over, and then started again. And
what the ground troops are doing on these different locations, they're doing what we call breaches. So they're moving, you know, through doorways or walls or that sort of thing. And they're also doing weapons proficiency.
Ciccioni says they're using simulated ammunition, almost like paintball pellets, to conduct the training. And even though the noise may affect your neighborhood, the nighttime training is only supposed to last from sundown to 11 p.m.
They are the best of the best because they get these kind of training events.
I thought somebody was, you know, doing something bad, and that's why we were jumping to the levees.
Burke says she wishes the training had been better publicized beforehand to avoid her own little case of shock and awe on a Tuesday night.
People were talking about it everywhere.
Now, the NOPD did put a press release out about the training, and we aired a story about it. That, however, was a week ago, and since U.S. Special Operations Command hasn't done a similar training here since 2000, it seems it caught many people by surprise. That training, Mike and Lucy, will go on every night through the end of this week.
And are they saying where, Katie?
They are not saying where. They're saying that's a safety issue, but if you do run into them, there will be police officers with NOPD there. You will not be allowed into those areas, so they're making sure that the public is safe.
Not what you want to hear at 10:30.
Right.
Thank you, Katie.
black helicopters over New Orleans for terror drills. Oh, apparently still going on throughout this week as I come to you Friday the 13th. And, of course, rightly so, New Orleans residents probably a little nervous, you know, about the military rolling in. Are they coming to quarantine us or confiscate our guns or not fucking help us at all? But as usual, cutting through the bullshit, cutting to the chase, Paul Joseph Watson, U.S. troops in black helicopters invade New Orleans. The New Orleans Police Department, along with the aforementioned 150 active duty U.S. troops currently engaging in what they describe as military training, as black helicopters whiz around the city dropping bombs in the latest example of Americans being incrementally conditioned to accept a state of de facto martial law. The training's been ongoing since January 27th and involves, quote, the use of military helicopters flying after dark throughout the city, according to an AP report, with a link for you. Residents, of course, were warned not to panic if they witnessed the training and were assured that the activities had been carefully planned and are safe. However, initial reports before the exercises began claimed that the training would only involve police, when in fact 150 U.S. troops from the U.S. SOCOM, that video game you love, that's more training for you, SOCOM, also involved as part of this urban warfare training. Residents described hearing low-flying helicopters and even bombs. Then, of course, we just heard from Gigi Burke. The militarization of law enforcement has rapidly advanced since 9/11 as part of the general program to prepare Americans for outright martial law following a mass cal event. That's a mass casualty event. A new bill introduced in Congress authorizes the Department of Homeland Security to set up a network of FEMA camp facilities to be used to house U.S. citizens in the event of a national emergency. The National Emergency Centers Act, H.R. 645. Hit the link, read it for yourself. H.R. 645 mandates the establishment of national emergency centers to be located on military installations for the purpose of providing, quote, temporary housing, medical and humanitarian assistance to individuals and families dislocated due to an emergency or major disaster. That's from the bill. With active duty military personnel already being stationed inside the U.S. under NORTHCOM, remember the combat brigades here? For crowd control. And of course, fears that Americans could be incarcerated in detainment camps are all too real. And of course, there are people in detainment camps already as we speak. They ain't dissidents. They ain't terrorists. Right now, I believe they're mostly illegal families. We also have a three-part video up on YouTube of a resident filming the helicopters at night around the University of New Orleans lakefront campus on February 3rd. I was going to play the clip, but perhaps I don't have time. But it's quite interesting to listen to this guy filming and go, oh my God, oh my God, what are they doing? And then he finally basically runs inside. Those links are there for you. And of course, the flashbacks to August of 2008, black helicopters over Portland for DOD terror drills, and of course, back to June 2008, black helicopters over Denver for terror drills. Remember they did the terror drills prepping for the DNC last summer? As I've started to say many times recently, that these aren't individual stories, and I think for the most part that's why on MediaMonarchy.com I have a hard time posting individual stories anymore. There are no individual stories. These things all mesh together. Just trying to follow the thread, follow the money, follow the violence, follow the lies. So this is not the first time we're going to hear about the National Emergency Centers Act, H.R. 645. Or New Orleans, for that matter, on this episode 111 of MediaMonarchy.com. However, moving into the police state, three massive postings. First, propaganda, danger, threats, and lists. First mention an article from the AP Wire and the Los Angeles Times, Pentagon clashes with media over control of information. However, if we jump to Danger Room, 27,000 work in Pentagon PR and recruiting. Forget the drone stuff. Here's the eye-popping statistic of the day. This year, the Pentagon will employ 27,000 people just for recruitment, advertising, and public relations, almost as many as the total 30,000-person workforce in the State Department, now overseen by Shillery. That's from an Associated Press investigation, not the Shillery part, but it found that over the past 5 years, the money the military spends on winning hearts and minds at home and abroad has grown by 63% to at least $4.7 billion this year. Staff costs take up most of the money, more than $2 billion, and another $1.6 billion goes into recruiting. About half a billion dollars goes towards, quote, psychological operations, which targets foreign audiences. And finally, $500.5 million goes into public affairs, which reaches American audiences. That last one may be the most amazing figure of them all, because getting a straightforward answer out of most of our military public affairs shops is still a root canal painful procedure. You'd think it'd be easier, what, with all those resources brought to bear? This article from Danger Room goes on, and if I stop and think too long about billions of dollars, not to mention the wasted man hours and wasted time, propagandizing the American public, billions of dollars, and you thought your phony fucking change president was going to touch that? Another example of CIA corruption. The CIA, the cocaine importation agency. We've got another agent pleading guilty, this time to defrauding covert credit cards. That's from Threat Level. And of course, that reminds us just recently that we went over the rape allegations against CIA station chief in Algeria. And the former CIA agent who was already sitting in jail for giving secrets to the Russians, sitting in jail in Sheridan, Oregon, where he brought his son in to go collect money from Russian gangsters and banksters. So now we have a CIA agent pleading guilty to defrauding covert credit cards. Mentioning the Russians, that reminds me what I wanted to say back when we played the adorable Killer Robots clip. When they mentioned the Russians. But they also mentioned civilians. Remember now, in the new terminology, you have to look at the signs, you got to look at the semiology, you got to look at the memes in the media. We're now civilians. We're not citizens anymore, we're civilians. So, you're either a killer for the state, in one way or another. You may not actually kill people, but you're killing the spirit. You're killing the hope. You ain't cop, you're little people. Again, from the source of a lot of interesting, disturbing information from the military-industrial complex, Danger Room, Blackwater's new business, training pro athletes. And again, I'll mention an awful lot of sports has been sneaking into MediaMonarchy.com. Blackwater Worldwide, again, remember, it's not USA, it's worldwide. USA doesn't exist. Blackwater Worldwide's core business, diplomat protection, is in trouble. The mercenary firm's getting kicked out of Iraq, and their actions in Afghanistan are now under investigation by the State Department's Inspector General, which is why Blackwater's diversifying their bonds fast. The company's latest offering, firearms and self-defense classes for pro athletes. The first weekend class at the company's compound in North Carolina is set for April, about 6 months after New York Giants receiver Plaxico Burress shot himself in the thigh inside a nightclub. No athletes have signed up yet for the weekend course, which the company only began advertising this past week. In some ways, it's a return to Blackwater's roots. What, with weapons-wielding dumbass jocks? Pretty much. The firm got its start providing such training, and last year some 25,000 people, civilians, law enforcement, and military attended its classes, the AP adds. Again, civilians. But Blackwater isn't simply going old school. Firm CEO Eric Prince has put together teams of spies for hire. The company's pushing ahead with plans to protect commercial ships traveling through pirate-packed seas. And in case that doesn't work out, Blackwater's also making custom rifles, marketing spy blimps, assembling a fleet of light attack aircraft, and billing itself as experts in everything from cargo handling to dog training to construction management. But many athletes, especially NFL players, feel these days like they have to take drastic measures to protect themselves, which makes me think a few of them might like the idea of being trained by the world's most notorious mercenary outfit. So that's so many levels, so many layers. Pro athletes, especially NFL players, feel like they have to take drastic measures to protect themselves, but they, of course, end up shooting themselves in the leg because they're paranoid and blustering and full of shit. We'll also see, as you see Blackwater getting into everything down to dog training. We had an article many months ago, Blackwater is the Walmart of the military industrial complex. And of course, in the breakdown, in the coming North American Union, new currency, new ideas, some change, we're going to see massive firms like Blackwater, like Walmart, providing everything. They'll be the one-stop shop. You want a job, you go to Walmart. You got to do your thing. You want to gain citizenship, you're, of course, going to have to join the state Stasi. There are a million links in this story, and again, I could go on and on about sports and military, but I won't. Not right now. More on, of course, the perversion of the animal kingdom. You know, it's one thing if we want to fucking kill ourselves, you know, it'll be all our own fault collectively as humans, but we're also, of course, not only destroying the environment, and not in the bullshit ways, not in the anthropogenic, man-made global warming ways, but in the ways we don't like to talk about. We've hit recently, of course, all the cyborg moths and the dragonfly spy robots. But, of course, now we've also got from technologyreview.com the Army's remote-controlled beetles. But another one from Threat Level, House approves whitelist of people who aren't terrorists. I guess maybe that's the easier way to do it. It's like, well, why don't you just make a list of people who aren't terrorists, since apparently every fucking buddy is a terrorist, and that's true. We're the terrorists. When Congress, you know, finally got a chance to actually read the Patriot Act, and we got a chance to finally look at the Patriot Act, it's like, oh, that's these things are all against us. The House overwhelmingly adopted legislation this week mandating the creation of a new kind of terrorist watch list, a database of people who aren't terrorists but are routinely flagged at airports anyway. The U.S. Gov maintains a list of about a million names ahead of airline boarding. The list has been dogged for years by sloppy name matches that have ensnared innocent travelers, children, prominent politicians, government officials, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, Secretary of Education, and all men named David Nelson. Under the new plan, with a link to the Library of Congress, thomas.loc.gov, approved late Tuesday, 4:13 to 3, innocent victims of the terrorist watch list must prove to the Department of Homeland Security through an undetermined appeals process that they are not terrorists. They would then get their names put on what the legislation calls the comprehensive cleared list. The legislation is another attempt to assist wrongly flagged passengers and would supersede the troubled DHS Traveler Redress Inquiry Program, TRIP. which has been criticized for being slow or unresponsive to flyer complaints. The FAST Redress Act, if approved by the Senate, requires the government to report within 240 days on its project in implementing this new list. Did you catch that part? Where you have to prove you're not a terrorist? Papers, please. That's Police State International posting one down. Propaganda, danger, threats, and lists. However, it's on to the scanners, chips, checkpoints, and promise. First, another headline from The Guardian. Your ISP is watching you. And that's the irony of a lot of these things. So again, we can talk about stormtroopers, and we can talk about Nazis asking for your papers, please. But in reality, I, you, all of us, willingly give this up every day. Right now, you're online, you're tracked. Your cell phone, you're tracked. It's all tracked and traced. So again, like the poster that shows the Star Wars stormtroopers walking down the street that says fascism, you really think it's going to be this obvious? From CBS News. And all those connections that, again, we won't get into right now. Columbia Broadcasting System. Google offers to track you by your cell phone. Google is releasing free software Wednesday, 2 days ago, that enables people to keep track of each other using their cell phones. CNET got a peek of it, and they invite on to the CBS Early Show this cute girl from CNET who she talks about how Google wants to track you with Google Latitude.
Now you got to check this out this morning HealthWatch, a Google program that keeps track of people such as your kids. Natalie Del Conte, senior editor of our partner CNET TV, has a sneak peek. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, GPS have up until now been associated with road navigation, but Google is giving the concept of GPS a new spin, releasing a program just today that allows people to track each other's whereabouts using just cell phones. So Google gave us an exclusive access to the program, and I found a family to give it a test run. The Geller family is always on the move.
It's constantly a challenge to keep up with my daughters because they're always on the run. They're out with their friends. They're now in their teen years, so they have more independence.
This one's yours. And sometimes the parents don't know where 14-year-old Jordan or 16-year-old Carly are hanging out.
We usually don't get the call or text message till later.
So who better to test a new Google program called Latitude that allows users to track each other using just cell phones?
It's using a combination of GPS and what's called cell tower triangulation. If they don't want you to know where they are, they can choose your name and block you.
Oh, really?
They have full control. You can't.
Oh. What?
Don't tell them that.
Yeah.
We gave them cameras to record a video diary as they tested out the new program.
Do you know where Mommy is and Carly?
She's at the mall.
Which mall?
I don't know.
It looks to me like they're at the Westchester Mall.
And sure enough, Mom was, but when Nancy looks for Carly at the mall...
That is in Harrison, New York. And she's actually never been in Harrison, New York.
What about keeping tabs on Mom and Dad?
It's 12:02 a.m. and I'm sitting in my room waiting for my parents to come home from the city. And it says that she's swimming in the Hudson River.
The Gellers live in an area that has spotty cell phone reception, so they found that when they went to more urbanized areas, the accuracy of the program increased. Mm-hmm. This program can work with pretty much any phone with internet capabilities except the iPhone for now.
Except the iPhone?
For now. They tell me it's coming.
Okay. So basically, if I have a kind of a standardized telephone plan with my family, right?
Right.
I can go on Google and download this thing?
You put it on top of your existing Google Maps application. You just download it into your phone, and then you have to network with your friends and family and say, yes, I allow you to track me. So right now, we're tracking each other, and since we're in urban Manhattan, it knows where we are.
I just blocked you.
You did? That's
right.
Rude.
Natalie, thanks very much.
Oh, you blocked me. Now, of course, it's interesting to note that this is available on all the devices except the one you want to use it on, your iPhone. I don't know where to start or where to begin on that one. But one from the Associated Press, when you watch these ads, they watch you, of course, reminding us of Minority Report, and of course, reminding us of the audio spotlights that can beam advertisements into your head. Happens in downtown Manhattan. But again, with the Google attitude, the technologies themselves aren't inherently evil. Don't be evil. But they always, of course, roll them out under the guise of, oh, the children. Think of the children that I don't have fucking time to spend time with anyway. So let Google watch them. But yeah, Associated Press, when you watch these ads, they watch you. However, if we jump to news.9msn.com.au out of Australia, humans will be implanted with microchips. All Australians could be implanted with microchips for tracking and identification within the next two or three generations, a prominent academic says. Michael G. Michael, Serhan, Humbert, Michael G. Michael from the University of Wollongong's School of Information Systems and Technology has coined the term ubervalence. And you can read a lot about ubervalence through these links, and you can hit a lot of Michael G. Michael's papers, as well as papers, I believe, from his wife. Michael's coined the term ubervalence to describe the emerging trend of all-encompassing surveillance. Ubervalence is not on the outside looking down, but on the inside looking out through a microchip that is embedded in our bodies, Dr. Michael told 9MSN. So this is MSN out of Australia. This is mainstream. Headline, humans will be implanted with microchips. Microchips are commonly implanted into animals, again, the desecration of the animal kingdom, to reveal identification details when scanned, and similar devices have been used with Alzheimer's patients. We've covered these over the last almost 3 years on this show. It starts reasonable. U.S. company Verichip is already using implantable microchips, which store a 16-digit unique identification number on humans for medical purposes. Michael G. Michael also predicted that microchip implants and their infrastructure could eliminate the need for e-passports, e-tags, and secure ID cards. Microchipping, I think, will eventually become compulsory in the context of identification within the frame of national security. Microchipping, I think, will eventually become compulsory in the context of identification within the frame of national security. The national security state, the media, military, industrial, entertainment, control, grid, complex will track and trace you for national security. Although ubervalence was only in its early phases, Dr. Michael's wife, Katina Michael, a senior lecturer from UOW's School of Information Systems and Technology, said the ability to track and identify any individual was already possible. Of course it is. Anyone with a mobile phone can be tracked to 15 meters now. Would you like the link to read about that? It's there for you. She also pointed out that most mobile phone handsets now contain GPS receivers and radio frequency identification readers, RFID readers. Remember, watch Suspect Nation, or just go back to the clip we played a couple weeks ago. Track and trace on your cell phone even when it's turned off. The worst scenario is the absolute loss of human rights. That said again by Katina Michael. Wisconsin, North Dakota, and four other states in the U.S. have already outlawed the use of enforced microchipping. Australia hasn't got specific regulations addressing these applications. We need to address the potential for misuse by amending privacy laws to ensure personal data protection. But you will be assimilated. Funny headline, interesting article from Time. Can your name make you a criminal? Oh, let's glance at this one. In the Shel Silverstein pen, Johnny Cash hit a boy named Sue. A father explains that he gave his son so improbable a name because I knew you'd have to get tough or die, and it's that name that helped to make you strong. It turns out that your first name also may make you a criminal. New study published in the March issue of Social Scientist Quarterly. Your name can make you a criminal. To get the boys' names, the authors had to agree not to reveal the state's names. Running down through the article, developed an equation. Michael, score of 100. Davy got 50. Ernest, Preston, Tyrell, Kareem, Malcolm, Alec, Reach, given a 1. I don't have time to go through that, but it's funny and kind of complicated. And your very name could make you a criminal. And my name is Sue. How do you do? Dallas Morning News has 45,000 red light camera citations in a town of 38,500. That's a lot of red light camera citations, my friends, and as, of course, we've gone over the fact that Lockheed Martin owns many of these. They have been caught cranking down the yellow time so they, one, can collect more money, and two, make it far more likely that your dumbass is going to crash. A Duncanville, Texas city council member wants to reevaluate how the city issues citations to red light runners and make it easier for suspected violators to request a jury trial. Remember those? Paul Ford questions the nearly 45,000 citations issued in 2008 at four intersections monitored by cameras. Compared with Duncanville's population of 38,500 people, he said the number of citations seems excessive. According to Ford, the city will take in more than $3 million from citations issued in 08. These tickets are not safety-related. They're revenue-related. Period. And that's true. And, of course, they can track and trace you. And they, of course, in Oregon, where I sit, our governor would like to track you by the mile with a GPS device in your car. So you can, of course, pay your bullshit carbon tax to the global government and banksters with the phony anthropogenic global warming scare. Oh, wait, it's climate change. Sorry. California checkpoint lasts for days. That's from OCRegister.com. Again, checkpoints. Papers, please. Salt Lake Tribune has a Utah senator asking for scanners and databases in restaurants, a proposal to scan the driver's licenses of bar patrons and keep it on file in a state law enforcement database is a good start, says Senate President Michael Wadoops, W-A-D-D-O-U-P-S, City Council member, or rather, Senate President, sorry. I was confusing it with the red light camera guy. A proposal to scan the driver's license is a good start, says Wadoops, but he wants to see the program go further. Wadoops, a Republican from Taylorsville, says he wants to see the database idea start with private clubs, but extend to restaurants that serve diners, beer, and liquor. That would greatly expand the scope of data collection and create a new requirement for restaurants, which are not required to have people sign up as members in order to serve beer and liquor. There are fewer than 400 clubs and taverns and nearly 1,100 restaurants licensed to serve alcohol. This is, of course, out of the Salt Lake Tribune, and this is from Taylorsville, Utah. And one of these days, we'll spend some time and dive into the bizarre world of the Mormons and Joseph Smith and alchemy and sinister forces. But the last thing we're going to briefly mention on this second massive police state international posting, scanners, chips, checkpoints, it's time for the promise. Without the E at the end. An amazing three-part article, at least three parts now, from existentialistcowboy.blogspot.com, Maine Corps, Promise, and the Shadow Government. Now, as I waited for all three parts to come out to post them up, I cannot find a decent way to actually summarize said article. So there's just a link for you. However, Promise ties into, of course, Inslaw and the Justice Department and Danny Casolaro and the Octopus. Maine Corps is the updated version of that. And, of course, the shadow government, well, that doesn't exist. And now, the third massive police state international posting, camps, churches, gangs, and governments. And I ask you if there's any difference between those things. Camps, churches, gangs, governments. We return to H.R. 645, the National Emergency Centers Act. The man who broke this article is the one and only Lee Rogers, behind RogueGovernment.com and Live Free or Die Radio. We're going to go through his article, The Reality of FEMA Camps and the Martial Law Apparatus. However, there's a longer interview. We're going to listen to a quick clip of Lee Rogers as a guest on the syndicated CBS radio show Overnight America with host John Grayson discussing H.R. 645, or the National Emergency Centers Act, which authorizes existing facilities to be used as national emergency facilities, as well as the Homeland Security Secretary to build additional FEMA facilities on open and closed military bases.
We bring in our first guest for the evening because an article across the desk, about a week and a half ago, and it was all about the National Emergency Centers Act, which is House Resolution Number 645, and it has caused all kinds of consternation in certain areas, certain segments of the populace, of folks who are not at all happy about this. Now, over time, there have scarce been very many more controversial agencies than the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and it seems like groups on both sides of the political spectrum get all up in arms about anything that has to do with FEMA, and they certainly didn't do themselves any favors in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina and the whole Mike Brown fiasco. But FEMA, anytime they come up, there are going to be people who figure that what they're doing just isn't right. One of the folks who falls into that category is Lee Rogers, and Lee Rogers is the webmaster of a website called RogueGovernments.com, and in the article that I just mentioned about the National Emergency Centers Act, and has been kind enough to spend a little bit of time with us tonight here on Overnight America. And Lee Rogers, thanks for being with us.
Hey, John, thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Now, first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself, because for anybody who has not been to RogueGovernment.com, what do you do there?
Well, essentially what we do is we try to compile news and information that the mainstream social media doesn't really get to, especially those like National Emergency Centers Act, the National Emergency Centers Act, H.R. 645, and we try to expose a lot of stuff the mainstream media just doesn't get into. We cover National Security Presidents Directive 51, which essentially allowed the presidency and dictator to keep the national emergency. We cover the Dockmart Bill, H.R. 1955, which thankfully did not pass the Senate, but the passed the House of Representatives. We cover all sorts of weird legislation and news on these websites, Broker.com, BlacklistNews.com, Star One, as well. And I do a radio show on OracleBroadcasting.com that gets to a lot of stuff. And we managed to break this news story on National Emergency Centers Act for H.R. 645 last week. First one to do it, and it's a very disturbing piece of legislation. But essentially, it's something I do in my spare time. I think it's important that everybody is as informed as possible on these various issues, and people just get out there and think, because we need more thinkers. And right now, I just believe that too many people are just going right along with the major media's talking points and actually doing a research on these issues.
So this is what you do in your spare time. What do you do in the rest of your time?
Oh, I'm just a professional.
Oh, really? Okay, so you're in the IT field. You know, I mean, I could use a good webmaster.
Is that right?
Yeah, well, you know. But let's get into the bill itself a little bit. What exactly does the National Emergency Centers Act do?
Well, essentially, this bill, it legalizes and authorizes the government to build these emergency facilities on closed or open military bases. Now, we already know that they've been doing this for quite some time. A lot of this news came out during that Iran-Contra affair with Oliver North. Congressman Jeff Brooks actually questioned North on this, and he was stopped by the chairman's committee before he got any further.
May I respectfully request that we not touch on that topic? If you recall from the Iran-Contra hearings, where Congressman from Texas Jack Brooks asked Oliver North if he was involved in, you know, continuity of government schemes that would suspend the Constitution. And of course, he was stopped quite quickly. That's Lee Rogers on Overnight America, syndicated CBS show, and that's, of course, just kind of the little intro bit. They do get into H.R. 645. It's not the greatest interview, and of course, as I listened to it, I thought, no, that's not good. Don't say that. Say this. But it's easy to armchair quarterback but not be on the field, to use a wretched sports reference. However, let's get to one of the articles about H.R. 645 from Lee Rogers and RogueGovernment.com, the reality of FEMA camps and the martial law apparatus. There's no doubt that the government's preparing a nationwide system of detention facilities under the guise of emergency management that could be used to house large quantities of Americans during a time of civil strife. Many think that it's a conspiracy theory. It's not. It's a fact that the federal government has many facilities right now that can be used to house large numbers of political dissidents if the need arises, or if they get mad about the economy. During World War II, the U.S. government, through an executive order by FDR, forced many Japanese Americans to move into internment camps. Couldn't happen here. In 2006, George W. Bush signed legislation to preserve these camps. Why would he do this unless there was a chance that they would be used in the future? In addition, KBR, the engineering and construction arm of Halliburton, was recently awarded a $385 million contract to build detention facilities under the guise that they would be used to house illegal immigrants. This news broke at a time in which the outrage against illegal immigration was at an all-time high and covered extensively in the media, which in essence made the announcement less controversial. The aforementioned KBR building illegal facilities, or facilities for illegals. There's also a great deal of anecdotal and video reports of detention facilities in many areas around the country that have been posted on the web by concerned citizens. Photos, videos, strange plastic coffins. I believe there's even an update that I have not posted up yet about Chicago and FEMA and mass graves. But we'll have to get into that later. All this, with all this in mind, it's additionally disturbing that institutions like Homeland Stupidity and NORTHCOM have been incrementally moving this country into a militarized police state through a wide variety of initiatives and programs. With the economy unraveling on a day-to-day basis, the possibility of civil strife becomes greater and greater, and the possibility of the establishment needing these types of facilities continually increases.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Last week, RogueGovernment.com was the first to break the news of legislation proposed in Congress by Representative Alcee Hastings, Democrat from Florida. Thanks, Democrats. You're so progressive. That would legalize and authorize the construction of national emergency centers on open and closed military bases, which would be run by FEMA. It's already confirmed that infrastructure which could possibly be used in this capacity is already available to the U.S. Gov. So for all intents and purposes, this bill will essentially provide the legal capacity for them to use already existing facilities as emergency centers. Retroactive immunity. It works both ways. It also provides the government the authority to create additional facilities, so long as a minimum of six are built to fulfill the needs of the FEMA regions. The language in the bill, of course, also authorizes the Secretary of Homeland Stupidity, that's now Napolitano, to use these facilities for whatever purpose the Secretary believes is necessary. So if the Secretary wanted to use them as concentration camps, death camps, or torture facilities, the language in the bill authorizes that activity. However, John Grayson, in the interview with Lee Rogers on Overnight America, says it doesn't say you can break the law. Criminals don't care about the law. The gangs and the government, there's no difference. Freedom TV, Gary Franchi, Restore the Republic, has a video up not only about Second Amendment attacks, but let's listen to the clip for more on the H.R. 645 National Emergency Centers Act.
Hello, Gary Franchi here for Freedom.tv and RestoreTheRepublic.com. I have two urgent action alerts that require your immediate attention. The members of Resort of the Republic raise these issues by phone and email. This first alert comes from RTR blogger Michael Von Assen. A rather storied piece of legislation has been introduced in the House of Representatives entitled the National Emergency Centers Establishment Act, numbered House Resolution 645. Many people in the freedom movement have whispered, shouted, talked, and warned others about the unaccounted-for FEMA facilities being built around the country for several years now. Well, it seems like Congress is currently facing the issue of opening these facilities and to begin using them for their intended purposes. The bill will serve as the authorization to open and declare what these facilities can be used for and what they are preparing to do. The bill begins with the establishment of national emergency centers, which will mandate that Homeland Security use no fewer than 6 existing military facilities in each of the existing FEMA regions to provide aid to individuals and families in the event of a declared emergency or natural disaster. These facilities will also need to train law enforcement entities, as well as clergy and other entities that will prepare the average citizen for a major event. These facilities will be required to be equipped for long-term stays by citizens. Requirements for these camps are that they must be located in close proximity to a transportation corridor. They must be located in a state with high level or threat of disaster-related activities. They must be located near a major metropolitan center. And they must be capable of meeting for an extended period of time the housing, health, transportation, education, public works, humanitarian, and other transition needs of a large number of individuals affected by an emergency or major disaster. These facilities must be capable of being scaled up or down according to the need. It must be capable of housing existing permanent structures necessary to meet training and first responders coordination requirements during non-disaster periods. These camps must also consist of 2 state-of-the-art command and control centers, one in full ready mode and the other used daily for training. The bill designates an initial funding estimate at $360 billion for a period of 2 years. The bill specifically defines emergency and major disaster. It defines emergency as a means of any occasion or instance for which, and by the determination of the president, federal assistance is needed to supplement state and local efforts and capabilities to save lives, protect property, and public health and safety. Major disaster means any natural catastrophe or, regardless of cause, any fire, flood, or explosion in any part of the United States, which, in by determination of the president, causes damage of sufficient severity and magnitude to warrant major disaster assistance. Given recent language of bills like H.R. 1955, introduced in 2007, and the nefarious Patriot Act, everyone is now considered a terrorist threat, and everyone is being monitored by the NSA supercomputers. H.R. 645 is well beyond the scope of federal constitutional power and could be used in the event of a false flag operation to round up American citizens suspected of involvement, usurping the traditional constitutional means. You must act now to prevent this bill from becoming law. Please contact your representatives and instruct them to vote no on House Resolution 645. You can visit congress.org to find your congressman's information.
You starting to get the idea? H.R. 645. But now, from DefenseLink.mil, from the horse's mouth, DOD establishes civilian expeditionary workforce. the Defense Department is forming a civilian expeditionary workforce that will be trained and equipped to deploy overseas in support of military missions worldwide, according to department officials. The intent of the program, quote, is to maximize the use of civilian workforce to allow military personnel to be fully utilized for operational requirements. Deputy Defense Secretary Gordon England signed Defense Department Directive 1404.10 PDF download for you. It all outlines and provides guidance about the program. Civilians, workforces. A quick headline, again from The Guardian. Governments across Europe tremble as angry people take to the streets. But another one from Paul Joseph Watson here on this homeland. Church organization refuses to divulge if their pastors are on the FEMA payroll. A large church organization has refused to divulge how many of its pastors are on the FEMA payroll, or if they are, after a member expressed concerns about religious leaders being used to condition their congregation to accept the Declaration of Martial Law. In a May 2006 story, Paul Joseph Watson, the InfoWars crew, Prison Planet crew, broke with the help of others, and I believe even Butch Paul from Southern West Virginia, broke the story that FEMA was training pastors and other religious representatives to become secret police enforcers who teach their congregations to, quote, obey the government in preparation for a declaration of martial law, property and firearm seizures, and forced relocation. Despite debunkers and urban myth websites claiming the story was a hoax, it was confirmed in triplicate by mainstream news outlets over a year later. The KSLA news report confirmed that, quote, clergy response teams are being trained by the federal government to quell dissent. Jump back to August 2007 on MediaMonarchy.com, and I believe it is a Paul Joseph Watson report, clergy response teams to quell unrest. And they're going to pacify citizens to obey the government in the event of a declaration of martial law. Of course, this all coming from Romans 13. Government is set up by God, so you got to do what government says to be a good Christian. Concerned about such developments, a member of the California-based Worldwide Church of God, with a link to Wikipedia for you, Worldwide Church of God, an organization that boasts 64,000 members in 860 congregations in about 90 countries. So somebody asked if any of the church's pastors were involved in the FEMA program. The head office quickly replied hastily within an hour, telling me, sorry, that's privileged information. The reply was in big, bold script like I'd never seen before in emails. It was also a bit put off by the word privileged. I responded to the stated email and reworded my request slightly by demanding, are there any of our pastors on the payroll of FEMA? Yes or no? Their first response came after about an hour, but it's been almost 24 hours, still waiting for the church's second response to the second request. This from the unnamed source. Some of the folks tried to stay secret when breaking the clergy response team story, but they, of course, were tracked down and fired and reprimanded. So there you have the Worldwide Church of God organization stonewalling about how many folks, both home and abroad, are involved in clergy response teams. And again, to me, it all, I can't even express it in a way that it makes sense when you sometimes can just kind of see it all. And I'm not saying I'm the genius, I can see it all, I know everything. But when you see all the dots and you see the way that they connect, and I can't explain it well enough for you. Clergy response teams, Project Blue Beam, some sort of fake rapture situation. Audio spotlights. But there's good stuff from WikiLeaks.org. They've got a nice little U.S. Special Forces Unconventional Warfare Ops manual posted up for you. It's a 7-meg PDF that you can download. And what are the U.S. Special Forces Unconventional Warfare Ops? Sabotage, subversion, and abduction. Nothing to see here. Move along. Another one from RogueGovernment.com as it spreads to the children or the young adults, a new bill proposed to federalize college campus security. A new bill proposed in the U.S. House of Representatives. See, all these bills are coming out because our new great change-addled Congress is in session now. That's why we're getting all these great bills of bullshit bailouts for banksters and a fuck you to you and your job that used to make something in America. So we're getting things like H.R. 645, or in this case, H.R. 748, a bill that seeks to take federal control over the security of college and university campuses across the nation. House Resolution 748, or the Campus Safety Act of 2009, would provide grants to institutions of higher education and other nonprofit organizations to assist in carrying out a myriad of functions pertaining to standardizing campus security across the country. Yet another attempt by the federal government to centralize even more control over any sort of local law or local community agency pertaining to campus, public safety, and law enforcement. H.R. 748, Campus Safety Act. But what's it sound like when a cop punches a teen girl in the face a bunch of times?
Why did you hit me and I'm handcuffed?
From the 6 minutes of video captured by two Millville police dashboard cameras emerged two very different versions. What happened on an early morning last February?
I'm stopping you for a second. You're on your bike in trouble.
The just released video is at the center of a lawsuit in which this woman, Sheila Stevenson, claimed she became the victim of excessive force after then Millville police officer Carlo Drogo pulled her over for illegally riding her bicycle on a sidewalk. In the course of trying to handcuff Stevenson, the video shows Drogo as he sprays himself in the face with pepper spray, and she appears to push him. Drogo then appears to knock Stevenson to the ground to subdue her. Drogo is seemingly doubled over in pain as other officers arrive.
I'm not doing nothing.
Put your hand, Margaret.
Can you not do this? I'm not doing it.
Seconds later, Drogo approaches Stevenson again and appears to punch her four times.
Why are you leaving?
Stevenson is eventually led away. She was later convicted of resisting arrest. Stevenson's civil suit filed in December names Drogo, other officers, and the city of Millville as defendants. Stevenson's lawyer would not comment, nor would Millville's police chief.
Carlo Drogo resigned from the police department in October for undisclosed reasons. He wouldn't speak with us on camera, but he issued a statement in which he stands by his actions and calls Stevenson's allegations a distortion of the facts.
Drogo also insists the arrest was lawful and describes the lawsuit as frivolous. Meanwhile, there's now a warrant out for Stevenson's arrest on drug possession charges stemming from her encounter with police that was caught on camera. Ted Greenberg, NBC 10 News.
Drogo. The name Drogo reminds me of droogies. Drogo and his droogies. Out for a little bit of the rough and tumble. Of course, droogies from that movie Clockwork Orange where the criminals turn into the cops. Yeah, that one. From USA Today, again, it all makes sense. It all fits together. It's all in the puzzle. Gangs behind 80% of U.S. crime. Well, they're gangs, all right. But how infiltrated are they? How many informants are there? How many agent provocateurs are they? Criminal gangs in the USA have swelled to an estimated 1 million members responsible for up to 80% of crimes in communities across the nation, according to a gang threat assessment compiled by federal officials. The major findings in a report by the Justice Department's National Gang Intelligence Center, NGIC, which has not been publicly released, oh, but it has, conclude that gangs are the primary retail-level distributors of most illicit drugs, and several are capable of competing with major U.S.-based Mexican drug trafficking organizations. So the gangs are primary retail-level distributors of illicit drugs. Well, then the question is, where do they get it? None of us owns a poppy field. Cocaine Importation Agency. The gangs run the drugs, it's true. So the gang population is up an estimated 200,000 since 2005. Bruce Farrell, chairman of the Midwest Gang Investigators Association at MGIA.org, whose group monitors gang activity in 10 states, says the number of gang members may be even higher than the report's estimate. So I guess perhaps at the time of this posting, the National Gang Threat Assessment 2009 wasn't released, but it is now. It's on the Department of Justice website. It's about 10 megs, and it's linked for you there. Naomi Klein has another piece up on The Guardian. It's the global backlash talking. However, that ends this third massive posting of Police State International, camps, churches, gangs, and governments. And no, there's not much difference between any of them. We're going to shift gears, though. The attack on our health. EnviroHealth. Ecoterror, eugenics, re-education, and recalls. Kentucky warns of salmonella risk in FEMA-provided meals. This from McClatchy. Kentucky emergency management officials are getting Kentuckians another source of prepared meals after the FEMA announced that some meal kits might contain contaminated peanut butter. The FEMA meal kits were distributed to storm victims in Kentucky during that past week. The kits might contain peanut butter that's part of a nationwide recall because of salmonella. Kits are manufactured by Red Cloud Food Services Incorporated under the Standing Rock label. The only portion of the meals that might pose a danger is a packet of peanut butter, according to FEMA. Again, fine work from FEMA. The update that I do not have posted up yet is, of course, that the peanut execs on the Hill pleading the fifth and won't eat their own product. Could eco-terrorists let slip the bugs of war? That's an article by Jeffrey Lockwood from the Times Online. Of course, the meme, again, bioterror, as we're going to get into it. West Virginia turkey farm fired more than three indicted workers. We hit this a few months ago. This from the Examiner. Though only three people have been indicted for alleged animal cruelty at a West Virginia turkey farm, the company says others who worked there also were fired. Aviagen Turkeys Incorporated, A-V-I-A-G-E-N, which basically kind of sounds like clone birds, Avi and Jen. Their spokeswoman, Sandy Hoffman, wouldn't release details but said the firings went beyond the workers who were charged in a 19-count indictment in Greenbrier County, West Virginia this week. Norfolk, Virginia-based People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, which secretly videotaped bird stomping and other violent acts last fall with the flashback link to December 2008 on MediaMonarchy.com, EnviroHealth, Water, Web, Weather, and West Virginia. PETA claims Aviagen continues to employ workers it saw mistreating birds at the Lewisburg turkey farm. Hoffman disputes that, saying several other workers were fired for violating internal animal welfare policies. Aviagen Turkeys is a subsidiary of Alabama-based Aviagen Incorporated. The octuplet mother story keeps going on and on because it's going to bring up the new memes that we need out here of population control and eugenics. Octuplet mother also gives birth to ethical concerns. That's from the Washington Post. However, if we return to the Examiner and we return to West Virginia for the second of third times now, ailing West Virginia towns with bad water sue over slurry. Maria Lambert says she never had a clear, odorless, tasteless water. Sometimes it felt greasy or smelled of rotten eggs, but the day a blast from a nearby strip mine shook her southern West Virginia home, it got worse. Immediately, there was slime that ran through the ice maker. It just looked like orange jello. It wasn't gobs, but if you'd stick a glass under the spigot to get some water, you'd see it was there. Now she and 250 people with orange and black water in their taps, tubs, and toilets are suing eight coal companies they believe poison their wells by pumping mine waste into former underground mines. The lawsuit filed recently in Boone County Circuit Court claims decades of surface and underground mining activities near the communities of Printer and Seth fractured the geologic strata that contained the slurry, a byproduct of cleaning the coal. It claims the network of cracks created a pathway for the slurry to contaminate the aquifer. utter destruction. UK teens have lower IQs than their counterparts 30 years ago. That's one from The Telegraph. However, third report from the Examiner in West Virginia, 14 arrested for trespassing at a coal mine protest. 14 protesters who claim a Massey Energy Company surface mine in West Virginia could cause flooding and harm a nearby town were ticketed for trespassing last Tuesday. Five of the protesters chained themselves to heavy equipment at Massey's Beetree surface mine on Coal River Mountain. Five of the protesters were identified as members of ClimateGroundZero.org and Pan Appalachian Mountain Justice, that's at MountainJustice.org. Hit up the news releases, read more about the protests, the resistance in a more or less forgotten part of the world, my hometown, my home state, West Virginia. From Natural News, we've hit this before, and it'll hit us again. FDA to approve genetically engineered animals and treat them as intellectual property.
From worms to goats, the FDA has just approved a new blood clot preventative that comes from genetically engineered goats. Now, this marks the first time the FDA has approved a drug created by genetically altered animals, but there are critics, including the Humane Society of the United States.
I swiped that video and posted it up to youtube.com/MediaMonarchy. FDA adopting new rules allowing companies to sell genetically modified animals and their products on the market and affirming that the DNA of such animals is private property that can be held under patent. Links in there and much more in there from naturalnews.com, arkansasmatters.com, and the New York Times. A funny one. It's funny when the elite rub things in our faces, but they give so many great things. Bill Gates released a jar full of mosquitoes at a conference for malaria awareness.
For example, there's more money put into baldness drugs than are put into malaria. Now, baldness is a terrible thing. And rich men are afflicted. And so that's why that priority has been set. But malaria, even the million deaths a year caused by malaria, greatly understate its impact. Over 200 million people at any one time are suffering from it. Means that you can't get the economies in these areas going because it holds things back so much. Now, malaria is, of course, transmitted by mosquitoes. I brought some here so you could experience this. We'll let those roam around the auditorium a little bit. There. There's no reason only poor people should have the experience. Those mosquitoes are not infected.
Not this time, they're not. Bill Gates releases mosquitoes at Conference for Malaria Awareness at the Technology Entertainment Design Conference, TED.com. Of course, there are more links. You can follow them. You can read about Bill Gates and basically his involvement in helping build, you know, underground seed vaults and putting vaccines into mosquitoes. What could possibly go wrong? Another one, but it's going to close out this EnviroHealth posting of EcoTerror Eugenics recalls. It's time now for the re-education. Again from Paul Joseph Watson, brainwashing kids to re-educate parents for the green dictatorship. A massive program with its tentacles embedded in almost every corner of education and pop culture is underway to use this green agenda to brainwash kids and turn them against their parents as, of course, the state moves towards the creation of a Stasi-style informant society using methods that have been repeated in every totalitarian state throughout history. The controversy surrounding Al Gore's comments during a speech at the University of Maryland's Presidential Youth Inaugural Conference, during which he pitted children against their parents by telling them they know more about global warming, is merely the tip of the iceberg of a top-down movement that's mimicking a technique that dictatorships have practiced throughout history. I'm getting ahead of myself. The exploitation and brainwashing of children to turn them into Maoist, Stasi, Hitler Youth-style informants and enforcers against their own family and community. Talking head Glenn Beck was spooked about the historical legacy that Gore is following in brainwashing kids to assume an adversarial position against their own parents in the interests of the state. We're going to hear a minute from Glenn Beck, and of course, he speaks out of both sides of his mouth, and he will hit important issues, but in the wrong way a lot of times. And, too, as it all ties in, as we kicked off the show with robots and all of these things, it all ties in. Watching Futurama last night, you see Al Gore come on because they're having an environmental catastrophe. Earth in the balance. So, brainwashing kids to re-educate parents for the green dictatorship.
I want to point out that this has been done exactly this way before in history. Wait until you hear what Al Gore is teaching the best and the brightest, what he's asking children to do. Here is the setup of, I mean, you get a sense, we're going to roll about a minute and a half of this. You're going to get a feeling of, oh my gosh, where he's going. Listen to the words of Al Gore.
But I'm thinking back now a long way to when I was your age. And the Civil Rights Revolution was unfolding. And we kids, as our parents and their generation, explain to me again why it's okay for the law to officially discriminate against people because of their skin color. Parents try to tell their kids the right thing, you know. Usually, I do. And when our parents' generation couldn't answer that question, that's when the law started to change.
Okay, stop for a second. Stop for a second. You hear where he's going? You know, my parents, they didn't know either. They didn't know. They couldn't answer that question. Okay, well, my parents could have answered that question, and I think they did answer that question. I mean, I grew up in the Seattle area, and we didn't have the race riots and everything else. I don't remember any of that stuff, but I do remember having conversations later in life when I was a little older and talking about it, and my parents going, there's no difference. There's no difference between us. So my parents answered that question. I think a lot of parents did, but Apparently Al Gore was raised by racists, because that's what I'm hearing here. But he's not really building to race, is he? That is, are we still having the race debate? Are our parents still saying that blacks are different than whites? Is that what he's building towards?
There are some things about our world that you know that older people don't know.
Stop! There are some things that you're 12! There are some things that you know that older people don't know. I'm hard getting started. That is one of the most incredible things I have ever heard. There are some things that you know that older people don't know. He is pitting the youth of this nation against their parents. We have a former vice president of the United States, a man who claims to have been president of the United States, saying to the best and the brightest 12-year-olds that you know better than your parents, that you don't have to listen to your parents on things because they just don't know. I'm trying to think where else this has been done. Oh my gosh, that was right. Soviet Russia, Nazi Germany, Mussolini's Italy. In fact, the Nazis took it an extra step. Not only did they indoctrinate the kids and tell them, you're probably right, you know, but your parents don't. In fact, here's the next step. Why don't you tell us what your parents are telling you? Are we having the new Hitler Youth? Is that what this is? The new Hitler Youth? I'm sorry, that's so politically incorrect. The new Green Guard.
Either way, cut it. It is. And we see all that coming. And I don't have time to dive any more into that because we need to talk about the plague-infested mice missing from the New Jersey Research Lab. This from All Headline News, which filters in some Fox News and some New Jersey Star-Ledger reports. The frozen remains of two mice infected with the bubonic plague are missing from a New Jersey bioterror research facility, and the facility waited 7 weeks to report the incident to federal and state authorities. Officials with the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New York in Newark, where the remains went missing, and FBI officials said the missing mice pose no public health threat. This is the same facility where three live plague-infected mice went missing in September 2005. Katrina time. Officials concluded those mice died. Yeah, they probably died. The frozen mice were noticed missing when an animal care supervisor went to prepare them for sterilization and incineration, the New Jersey Star-Ledger reported. University officials still think the remains were incinerated earlier, but lack the records to prove it. University officials say they contacted FBI, CDC, and state health officials when they realized the dead mice were not accounted for. Flashback on the labs, and we're just getting into the labs. Accidents at Plum Island Disease Lab acknowledge that jumps back to April 2008 on MediaMonarchy.com. However, my man Alex in Germany posted a comment to this, drawing the connection, perhaps, between these and other missing plague-infected mice. And do you recall the story a couple months ago that we covered, where the Black Death reportedly killed 40 Al-Qaeda operatives in North Africa? The idea that they had botched some sort of biolab thing and it killed 40 of them? Missing mice, dead Al-Qaeda. And we quote John Pilger that, of course, it's not a war on terror going on, it's a war of terror. So, thanks and a cheers right back to my man Alex. From the land, as he notes, where the Black Death killed between 75 and 200 million people in the 14th century. Miltech. Biolabs, spy sats, germs, and CERN. You thought we had forgotten about CERN. The end of the world machine. The CERN Atom Smasher relaunch delayed until September. From the AFP, researchers announced Monday a new delay for the restart of Europe's Big Bang Atom Smasher, saying the faulty multi-billion dollar machine would now be turned back on in late September. Blah-bitty blah, there's links for you to read about all of it. National Geographic, ComputerWorld.com, more from the AFP, and the flashback to MediaMonarchy.com. End of the world machine breaks down again, that going back to, of course, September 2008. We noted that Tony Tether, I believe, was wavering as the head of DARPA. That's, of course, the mad scientist wing of the military-industrial complex, Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. Tony Tether, the longtime chief of DARPA, is stepping down, so Danger Room runs down the shit list of some of the folks who might be up for the spot. Dr. Lisa Porter, DARPA for spy. She works at IARPA and worked for NASA. We've got Jay Cohen from Homeland Security and Office of Naval Research. Mark Lewis, again, Air Force. Michael Goldblatt, Functional Genetics, DARPA, and McDonald's. That is disturbing. Zan Alexander, Dr. Zan, physicist, deputy director of DARPA, Homeland Security Research Projects. Regina Dugan, again, from DARPA. Zach Lemnois, from MIT and DARPA. And finally, Dr. Amy Alving, aerospace engineer, chief technology officer at SAIC, and former director of DARPA's Special Projects Office. We always like to pay attention to Science Applications International Corporation, SAIC, and their involvement in the terror drills and the high-tech control grid. So a press release from them that dovetails quite nicely with perhaps someone from SAIC going to head up DARPA, Dr. Amy Alving. SAIC awarded a task order to support U.S. Joint Forces Command. However, if we jump to the register, Boeing says spy satellites on track for a launch. This happened well before the U.S. and Russian satellites crashed yesterday. If we have time, maybe we'll find the update on that. But for now, Boeing says their spy satellites are on track for launch. You get that? U.S. aerospace colossus Boeing says it's conducted successful ground testing of America's planned space surveillance satellite system. The idea, essentially, is spy satellites to spy on other spy satellites. Space-based space surveillance. Many links in there to, of course, Boeing, and read more about, again, the military command and control, high-tech future combat systems, and of course it's going to be a space war. The labs. The Amerithrax Lab. USAMRID. The Place. Stephen Hatfield. Frederick Maryland. Bruce Ivins. Anthrax. That lab. The Amerithrax Lab has halted research after a toxin tracking scare. When the Pentagon, see, this is bullshit from Danger Room. They start out and say, when the Pentagon needs the blah, 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 they go to USAMRID. Thanks, blah, blah, blah. Accounting records. They can't even keep track of their shit. And jumping to the other side of the country, halfway, Utah, from Deseret News, of course, Utah, dug away proving ground, nerve agent might be missing. Is the Army missing some nerve gas? Pentagon auditors concede that it's a remote possibility because of discrepancies in records between how much chemical weapons agent was initially stored and how much of it was later destroyed at Utah's Deseret Chemical Depot and other bases nationwide. But officials believe all the nerve agent in question was destroyed, according to a partially redacted and censored U.S. Army Audit Agency report. With a link to their website, I didn't find the report. It was obtained, actually, by Deseret News through a FOIA request. Auditors list in it several reasons that could have caused apparent but unreal variances in those records, but auditors concluded the Army Chemical Materials Agency didn't have complete assurance that amounts recorded in the system were accurate, which increased its chances for heightened levels of program scrutiny by federal, state, and international organizations that have a vested interest in the elimination of chemical weapons. Such words can cause shivers among Utahns who remember such things as the death of 1,000 sheep, or rather thousands of sheep, in Skull Valley, 1968, that were, of course, because of nerve gas tests that went awry at Dugway Proving Ground. Project Shad, chemical weapons, humans experimentation, foot and mouth disease coming from the labs. So we had nerve agents possibly missing from the Deseret facility in Utah. We've got USAMRID stopping research because they can't keep track of their toxins. We've got plague-infested mice missing from a New Jersey lab. This is all happening now. But let's go back in time. Past is prologue, as they say. We're going to spend the rest of our time discussing, of course, the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. But not so much the event, that's the show. Again, remember, planes into buildings and big explosions, that's the show. That's the magician twirling his baton to attract your eye. That, of course, has been trained to love bells and whistles and shiny things and big explosions. Biowarfare and the JFK assassination is a very real connection. This last posting, assassination updates, deeper down the rabbit hole. There's going to be several clips posted up thanks to, or at least linked up thanks to, Brass Check TV. But we're going to segue right into this, coming from the plague-infested mice and tracking toxins and missing toxins and losing chemical weapons. That's happening today. Now, biowarfare and the JFK assassination. It's easy, like we're saying, to mistakenly assume that there's no connection between any of this stuff. That's a long time, but that's 40, 50 so years ago. It's 2009. It's easy to mistakenly assume that everything that can be known about the Kennedy assassination has been uncovered. Here's a shocker. In addition to running around with Cuban exiles, right-wing nut jobs, organized crime figures, Lee Harvey Oswald appears to have had another more sinister job. He was an errand boy for a black-budget biowarfare project operated out of the infectious disease lab at the U.S. Public Health Service Hospital in New Orleans that went terribly wrong. If the well-documented assertions of the author of Dr. Mary's Monkey are true, the significance of any involvement Oswald might have had with the Kennedy assassination pales in comparison to biowarfare.
The name of the book is Dr. Mary's Monkey. How the unsolved murder of a doctor, a secret laboratory in New Orleans, and cancer-causing monkey viruses are linked to Lee Harvey Oswald, the JFK assassination, and emerging global epidemics. Now, if this isn't a catch-your-eye book, I don't know what is. It would certainly stand out on any bookstand that I know of. Cancer-causing monkey viruses, governmental secrecy and cover-ups, along with intrigues swirling about the assassination of President Kennedy. Just some of the elements of the new book put out by TrineDay, Dr. Mary's Monkey by Edward Haslam. And I have a scoop, everybody, because he is not going to be here in public until Friday. That's right. Friday at 11 o'clock, he's going to be over at the Whitney Hotel Commerce Room, 610 Poydras Street, and I guess he's going to be signing books over there. Is that right?
I'm doing a press conference there, and then we're going over to a digital bookstore after the press conference.
Oh, okay, okay. And thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
You know, I interrupted myself with your introduction. I didn't mean to do that. But thank you. You're over in Miami, are you?
I'm in Florida, but on the West Coast.
Oh, it's a secret location?
Well, not terribly secret. It's just south of Tampa, but right. Everybody knows the name of the town.
Yeah, now this book is an update of one you did in, what, 2004?
Yes, I'm 2005 was when it was released. I'm from New Orleans originally. I lived there for 35 years. I grew up there. And like many people there, I heard rumors about stuff that was going on in New Orleans that really concerns me. And so this is a story that has kind of followed me all through my life. But it was, you know, in the 60s that I heard about this underground medical laboratory and about the murder of this doctor and stuff. And it wasn't until the late 80s or early 90s when the stakes got really high with the AIDS epidemic that I decided I had to, you know, go back and find out what was fact and what was fiction and what was rumor and what was real and put it together so that I could understand it.
Okay, now can you start from fact number one and go through and give us really basically a synopsis in less than 5 minutes?
Sure.
Okay, you got it.
Okay, on one level, this is a cold case investigation into the murder of Dr. Mary Sherman, whose body was found in her apartment on St. Charles Avenue on July 21st, 1964. And a little bit later, a couple of years later, Jim Garrison did an interview with Playboy magazine. And in that interview, he stated that Dr. Mary Sherman, who was a very famous and very well-known doctor, and who worked for Dr. Altnoschner Sr. at his clinic, had been involved in a laboratory with David Perry, who Garrison was investigating for the JFK assassination. And this was the first mention of the connection. He also said there were other doctors involved. And he didn't even get a follow-up question, and I don't think he realized what he had his hands on. But I had heard a lot of funny stuff about the investigation being shut down and controlled and all that stuff. And one time I had even asked somebody from the DA's office to get him a copy of the homicide report, and he practically got fired for asking about it. So I knew something was up. About almost 30 years after it, I was able to get a hold of the police reports and the autopsy reports on Mary Sherman and even the FBI file on her. And the first real fact I want to point out to here is the public was never told the truth about what happened to Mary Sherman. The major fact of the case was known by the police, was known by the FBI, was known by the fire department, who found a body, but it was never told to the public. And that fact was that her right arm was burned off. And nothing in her apartment could have possibly done that. And we'll come back to this point later, but I'm doing the overview right now. So the question was, what were all these people involved in, and who were the players? And what happened is we have a sequence of events that starts back with the polio vaccine. And the word monkey in the title is because the polio vaccine was grown on monkey kidney cells.
That's just a little taste of an interview from about 2 years ago with Edward T. Haslam, who's the author of the book that I actually hold in my hand, Dr. Mary's Monkey, with an unbelievable subtitle that you heard, How the Unsolved Murder of a Doctor, a Secret Laboratory in New Orleans, and Cancer-Causing Monkey Viruses are linked to Lee Harvey Oswald, the JFK assassination, and emerging global epidemics. This book, like many fine books like it, are put out, of course, from Trine Day and Chris Milligan from here in Oregon. Trine Day is out of Walterville, trineday.com. The book is fascinating. All the connections blow my mind. And again, we went through from today to back then. The plague-infested mice now missing from the New Jersey lab. USAMRID and the Amerithrax lab shutting down research because they can't track their toxins. Chemical weapons possibly missing from Utah. They don't know how many they destroyed. This reverberates all the way back to Dr. Mary Sherman's laboratory that, if you've seen, which you must, the full length version of Oliver Stone's JFK. It's briefly alluded to in a scene with Joe Pesci, who plays David Ferry, who was connected to Dr. Mary Sherman. There's flashes, as of course all the quick cuts and transitions in JFK and the different film stocks. It flashes and shows rats in cages in a funky lab, an apartment, and makes some brief reference to it. He's working on some kind of cure for cancer. That's all real. What the book goes into and what swirls around and what connects the dots and all these things we've gone over just today, whether it's New Orleans, biolabs, Lee Harvey Oswald, missing toxins, the terror drills, the urban warfare drills going on in New Orleans as we speak. To this day, it reverberates. So past is prologue. There's a lot more under this posting of assassination updates as we go deeper down the rabbit hole. Another excellent but lengthy article, one that's hard to summarize up on MediaMonarchy.com from Existentialist Cowboy, The Origins of American Decline in the Assassination of JFK. However, from the Dallas Morning News, Dallas lawyer who represented Zapruder in his film negotiations has passed away. Samuel Morris Passman had one transaction that stood out among the many he handled for a multitude of his clients over his nearly 70 years as a Dallas lawyer. Mr. Passman represented Abraham Zapruder during negotiations for rights to the Dallas dressmaker's 8mm home video of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. Mr. Passman was 96 years old, and he died Wednesday at Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital of Dallas of complications after a fall at his home. Jumping down, Mr. Zapruder wanted financial security for his family and to avoid the perception he was profiting from the tragedy. So, cake and eat, according to news accounts of the negotiations. At a November 25, 1963 meeting with Life's Magazine Los Angeles bureau chief, I believe that would be C.D. Jackson, and Mr. Zapruder in Mr. Passman's office, the lawyer suggested that the first of six annual $25,000 payments be made to the family of J.D. Tippit, the police officer killed shortly after the president. I remember thinking that whatever fee Zapruder paid the lawyer, Passman had just earned every penny with that inspired suggestion, Richard B. Stolle, the Life executive, wrote in 88. Zapruder, who earlier had worried aloud about the Tippit family's future, agreed without hesitation, and his donation of $25,000 2 days later earned the public applauses it both deserved and was meant to elicit. Abraham Zapruder sold his film to Henry Skull and Bones Loose from Yale and Life magazine, aided by this lawyer when they met with C.D. Jackson and his connections with the CIA. Hit the links, read about it. JFK researchers broaden link to New Orleans mafia boss. This is another book review, I believe, about the latest Tom Hartman and what's the other guy's name? Lamar Waldron. Yeah, their new book, Legacy of Secrecy. The mob did it. The mob killed JFK and stole his body and fucked up the crime scene and put up a cover-up commission, and Bin Laden got NORAD to stand down and put a bullshit commission up and fuck up the crime scene. And yeah. Again, from Brass Check TV, there's a nice mention, as I'm running quickly out of time here and not going to be able to go in depth or play the last couple of clips. However, there was a book and a TV show you should know of called I Led Three Lives. Citizen, communist, counter-spy, real dude, Herbert Philbrick, FBI, infiltrator, back in the 40s. It was Lee Harvey Oswald's favorite show. So you have a guy whose favorite show is I Led Three Lives, about being a double, triple agent. What do you know? Another lengthy one from Existentialist Cowboy, Why Lee Harvey Oswald Had to Die, and another one from Brass Check TV, Oswald in New Orleans. That is a three-part clip of the Garrison investigation, and it, of course, goes into the battles that Jim Garrison had. You can watch all those. That's the clip I don't have time to play. The Many Faces of Lee Harvey Oswald is another Google video clip that's posted up. All these are assassination updates, deeper down the rabbit hole. Another review, this time out of Boston, book gets Boston talking about RFK's search for JFK's killers. That's from the Examiner. And we end with Kiss. That's, yeah, the band Kiss. Peter Criss, who was the original drummer for Kiss, he actually stars in a new direct-to-DVD movie that I'd never heard of before that comes out on the 24th of February called Frame of Mind. This brought to my attention thanks to antimusic.com. Kiss's Peter Criss in new JFK murder film. Kiss drummer Peter Criss will be making an acting appearance in the upcoming film Frame of Mind, released on DVD February 24th, 2009, with links for you to the site and Amazon as well. The film's a detective drama and centers around a new twist in the JFK assassination conspiracy theories when Detective David Sekka, S-E-C-C-A, discovers a piece of film showing a man concealing a rifle on the grassy knoll in Dallas. It becomes clear this is an important clue in uncovering the truth behind history. Peter Criss plays the character Mike, a New Jersey detective. There was originally a clip from BraveWords.com that was up on YouTube, but it got yanked, so I don't know what it looks like, so I anxiously await my Amazon order of Frame of Mind, this probably kind of bad JFK flick that stars Chris Noth of some TV show fame. One last book review. This is from WorldNet Daily, and again, these are all these latest batches of books that we've already covered. Legacy of Secrecy, Brothers, and now this one, Brothers in Arms, Gus Russo, Stephen Moulton. So that article actually makes the connection, not literally, but it sheds light. New look at JFK sheds light on OKC. You know, lone nuts, no one helping them at all. That whole spiel. And that's going to do it, my friends. My stuffy nose can't take any more, and I have to go to work, unfortunately. But, fortunately, we've got the list of creepy customers that have been to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. We've got somebody at Starbucks in the Bronx Googling Ground Zero Lounge, and I believe even later they're trying to figure out what happened to IdeoCast.com. The service that hosts Clyde Lewis's show has been inexplicably down now for well over a week. So we'll see what happens with the latest episodes of Ground Zero Lounge. Chrysler Technologies Airborne Systems out of Waco, Google top-off news story about SAIC. SAIC, of course, having to drop out of the contract running for top-off 5 because of a conflict of interest. Top-off 4, of course, the terror drill and Chertoff Homeland Security drill performed here in Portland, Oregon, 2 years ago. The U.S. House of Representatives out of Manassas visited. Again, Starbucks, Bronx, Ground Zero, wet-wired. Southwest Office Systems out of Euless, Texas, googled Louisiana FEMA exercises 2009 black helicopters over New Orleans for DOD terror drills. In-town suites in Elk Grove Village, Illinois. Somebody googled black helicopters over New Orleans. Someone at Northwest Airlines out of St. Paul, Minnesota googled Captain Jonathan Bayless. Of course, the latest mysterious death from the Minot Air Force Base, home of the rogue B-52s. Fermilabs with a .gov ISP out of Chicago. They were reading about the bacteria that played a role in the 1918 pandemic flu deaths. And if you'll recall, of course, they're recreating the 1918 flu in a lab. University of Texas at San Antonio hit me up from a posting that someone thankfully gave me on Reddit.com. ESPN, more disturbing sports references on MediaMonarchy.com. We're going to have to purge this. Out of Bristol, Connecticut, they googled Phelps arrest. And, of course, the bong hit heard around the world arresting people for smoking a plant that God or the universe gave us. Indiana Department of Education out of Pellston, Michigan, with their ISP, googled 1984 pesticide explosion. And finally, Kaiser Permanente Medical Care Company out of San Jose, California, they googled Jonathan Bayless obituary. I can't do it all justice. I can't paint it all together in a way that makes perfect sense for you. I can't speak as extemporaneously as I would like, as perhaps I do just when I'm discussing things, say, at home with my girlfriend or looking things up or talking with other people. You got to use the site. You got to use the power that we have through the web to spread this word and connect the dots and help others connect dots and ask them to help you connect dots. On the labs, on the drills, on the connections, on the green youth, the green squads. It's been an ugly episode as we've gone over killer robots, adorable killer robots, done in a funny way from The Daily Show because it's so funny. Which, of course, their segment was called Future Shock, which was, of course, the name of a real book about futuristic dystopic scenarios. Not a fiction book, a nonfiction book, Future Shock by Alvin Toffler. Black helicopters over New Orleans for terror drills going on as we speak. We had the propaganda, the danger, the threats, the lists, proving you're not a terrorist so you can get on the list that says you're not a terrorist. The scanners, the chips, the checkpoints, the camps, the churches, the gangs, the governments. No difference between any of those as the eco-terror, the bioterror, the eugenics, the re-education, and the recalls, and the plague-infested mice missing from New Jersey, the biolabs, spy satellites crashing, germs missing, the CERN doomsday device cranking up in September, and we still dig deeper down the rabbit hole and somehow find a way to connect it all. And we'll keep looking. And I thank you for coming along on this 111th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's Friday the 13th. It's the day before Valentine's Day. Get rid of the scary today. Spread some love tomorrow. Thanks for listening, my friends. Portland Radio Authority, Revere Radio Network, KBFR, all those places and more, MediaMonarchy.com. Like my man Webster Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care. We'll be right back.
thought police would get him just the same.